In the beginning, there was nothing. Then there were comic books. Once you enter our world, there is no escape. Comic exposure begins in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Comic Exposure Podcast. My name is Josh, and with me is my serialized mystery detective, the one, the only.
I ask questions first, do my due diligence, come back when I have all the facts, and then I shoot. Travis Rats here.
That's good. That's good. Because our story today is anything but that right there. And Travis, you're rocking a mustache right now, so you look very like Magnum PI for our
a mustache, a black cutoff gym shirt, and my Sunday black corduroy overalls.
It is very it's a priceless look that we've got going on today on the podcast today. Welcome to Comic Exposure, where Travis Ratz and I dive deep into graphic novels or trades, or we talk about what's going on in the world of nerddom. You know, we watched Madam Web 12 times already, and we can't wait to
love it.
We did not watch.
Love it.
Did not watch Madam Web. But on the episode today, you're on a comic book club episode where Travis and I read Ms. Tree,
okay.
One Mean Mother.
First, yes. Comment on this book. Finish the book. Yeah. Put it down for a second, and then said to myself, oh, mystery.
It took you that long. I like it.
Cover to cover.
So we read Mystery, One Mean Mother, written by Max Collins and art by Terry Beatty. Max Collins was the writer of Road to Perdition, a kind of crime author who did this and other things, wrote TV treatments, all sorts of stuff. And this is out on Titan Comics.
Can I tell you
something?
Go ahead, please.
Yeah.
Finish
it. It's on Titan Comics, but it was on the Hard Case Crime imprint.
Yeah, and it was on DC. This has an interesting publication history looking into it.
Yes.
It's been dug up and resurrected, reheated, I should say, a couple of times.
Yeah.
But I've said this to people before, and they're like, oh, you haven't seen that? And I haven't read it. I don't think most people know it was a comic book, Road to Perdition. But I never saw the film. And I love Paul Newman. It's one of the only Paul Newman films I haven't seen.
It's a good movie. Enjoyable film. Yeah, I've seen the film. It's good. This is the interesting thing about this, you just said it had as an odd publication history. So Hard Case Crime out on Titan Comics is also publishing pulp novels, like novellas. Mm-hmm. So if you want some pulp, that's how I found it. Is I was reading some of that stuff on my Kindle because I'm like, what can I read? That's, you know, I'm getting in my Kindle free, like Kindle reading. I was like, oh, that was fun. And then, you know, Kindle goes, hey, you read this. How about these 40 other things that you maybe you'll like this stuff. And I saw this, I'm like, huh, a comic. And then I looked at the interiors and I was like, oh, this is fun. This looks like I'll give it a shot. It's an interesting case of this starting off in parts of the original pieces of this starting off in an anthology magazine.
Esquire, right?
Bits and pieces.
No, Esquire magazine, but like Esquire was a publisher or something like that?
Eclipse,
so, yeah.
Yeah, so Eclipse was a publisher, an anthology series, and it ran in there 9 full color issues. Got her own comic book. Just this really interesting.
But that
thing
wasn't color.
Like,
one of them wasn't color in the early days. It was like,
yeah, there's a couple of them that ended up being blue, sometimes red,
two-tone
on a
stuff,
different,
like the Parker series.
Yeah, Aardvark Vanheim and Renegade Press. For 50 issues, right? So, like,
with this mustache, I feel like I should go by Aardvark Vanheim.
I think Aardvark Vanheim would be a perfect name for you. But it's been published in a bunch of different ways. Out on DC Comics is what this piece that we're reading is, the DC run, the full kind of 1991, I think, is when it originally was, treatment.
Which,
1990s.
Did you find the same information that I did as far as? So we opened this, I think, I don't even know how many issues this is, because my reader didn't, I don't think it had split them. And they were pretty long issues.
It kind of gives it the...
I think they're like 25-page issues, maybe, or maybe more than that.
I think it ends up being 4 or 5.
Yeah.
4 or 5 different issues, maybe 6 at the most.
And this... You think you're starting it from the beginning, but apparently it's not the beginning of it. It's
no.
Like, I mean, it feels such like the beginning of this. So much so that I don't really care what happened before, but there were a couple of odd flashbacks that I saw in the middle of it that was like, did I miss something? Did I black out for a second? So it is good to note that if you are reading this One Bad Mother, that you know that it's not like you can go back and read the original stuff if you want to.
Right, which is really cool that it's been collected in these different forms. And for me, like, just for preservation's sake, right? Just the idea, like, you can go find this because, you know, this is, for me, you know, Travis, and I have a love affair of, like, weird 80s and 90s short-run graphic novels.
Yes, sir. Like, right? Like,
I got a whole stack of them next to me of DC ones, and I desperately want to go find the original.
I was thinking about it. I was like, how many times 10 years ago? It'd be harder now, I think, because they kind of re-released this, so it's maybe a little bit more well-known. Yeah. But how many times at those kiosk booths at, like, you know, Phoenix Comic Con have we just overlooked some probably really dope sales on the original floppies of these?
Right? So, I mean, for me, it ends up being like, this is one of those, you know... It was on a whim that I read it, and I was like, you know what? This might be a fun one to do. You and I read a lot of crime books recently. This has kind of been the genre for us to go, like, middle-aged men. Yeah, we're middle-aged men. We like to live vicariously through women who shoot people with no regard for facts.
One bad mother.
Yes, she's one bad mother. And so this is essentially, it feels very much like a serialized TV show. It reads like episodic hour-long television, and each piece of this is a different part of the story. There's an ongoing thread, right,
with the Muertos mafia,
the muerta
mafia, which feels very much like the big bad behind, like, a Buffy series that isn't always the villain but ultimately is.
They're always tied to it somehow, right? So we get this backstory of the Muertas. We get Miss Tree. Michael is her name, which
there are three
which
Michaels
is wonderful.
Three Michaels.
Yes, that her name is Michael. And so
her dead ex-husband is, or her dead husband is Michael, and her stepson is Michael Jr.
Is Michael. And so she's also Michael. So very interesting way. But you get this sort of, like, serialized story of these crimes happening around her or her being part of, and ultimately ends with her being pregnant at the end of this. Does she give birth at the end? I don't remember if she does or not.
She does.
That's right. So she has the baby at the end of this thing. She has a baby. She now has to live. What does it mean to be a crime detective, a private detective, and a working mom, right?
Yeah, so the baby's daddy is up for grabs in this book. I'm going to posit, since she is a dick, maybe she's the daddy.
I'm going to say, I think we know who the dad is. It's that guy. It's guy. Yeah. It's her football friend.
But I guarantee if it goes on, I think it has. They're going to be like, oh, actually, I didn't tell you about this one night that I had with the guy with one hand that I work with.
But there's this real... So I guess one of the things... I mean, let's get into the story.
We kind of briefly summarized it. Anyway, so Michelle Tree, the series...
Michael
opens,
Tree.
Michael Tree. I keep... And then, again, didn't realize I had dyslexia until I didn't get mystery. Pronounce Muerta. Wrong. Sorry. And Michael is Michelle. But I'm glad you come to us for the facts here at Comic Exposure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So Michael Tree, the female protagonist of this.
Mystery, if you just want to, we just call her Mystery.
thank you. She owns her own detective agency. She has a couple people on staff and like a secretary. And The novel opens up and we find out that her husband used to be a detective as well. He was killed by the Morta family. The series is basically her, solving crimes and mysteries. But all of them, as you mentioned earlier, have a little something to do with her past connections to mysteries and her husband.
And this crime family, right? Like this Muerta family kind of is a through thread on it. I want to talk a little bit, Travis, about sort of how this feels different from some of the other crime books we've read, right? Because we've read a lot. I mean, not only we read a million Brubaker and Phillips books, but we've read other crime stuff as well. And how did this feel to you compared to some of the other stuff we've read?
Well, the art definitely saturates it, and it does feel very 80s. Down to her trench coat and stuff like that.
Her outfits, the shoulder pads, mm-hmm. right? Like, yeah.
You would think like the first thing that would pop in my mouth is the fact that she is a female, but I don't think that's anything new to have a female pulp detective. Yeah. You don't see it very often, but I don't think this breaks.
Hey, Cagney and Lacey, you think of we think of like TV shows, the female protagonist in this role is very normal, right? Like Murder, She Wrote and all of those things have given us that lens of the female protagonist in this role a lot. Right?
Yeah. But in comics, I would say that I think what separates this from some of the other crime books that we've seen in this milieu is the fact that they're not afraid to go dark and gritty, but not gratuitous. Even sometimes Brubaker and Phillips can get a little bit more like into like, I mean, there's some dark content here as far as the subject matters. And there are some really holy shit moments as you kind of flip your page. But it doesn't seem like, you know, it's not Garth Ennis. It's not some of these other kind of, when we think of dark and gritty, it's not gratuitous and still felt, when we say hard-boiled detective, I felt like it really walked that line of being hard-boiled, but not being extraneous with it. What about you?
Yeah,
what
do you think? I would agree with you. I think this, I would also suggest that this felt far more serialized, right? It felt far more episodic in the way that it was written. And what I really thought was interesting is when you, later on, there's a write-up by Max Allen Collins talking about the process for this and how this was a possible treatment for television, right? Like Ms. Tree was this thing, but the network picked up a different gritty cop show, NYPD Blue, which is just, it's just this wild thing. Like this was written, came out, started the idea of this being a pilot, and it feels very much like television. I will say, I think this, compared to some of the other stuff we've read, feels very 90s, 80s TV.
Well, and to combine our two thoughts together, he said that in their original production of it, when it was going to be a TV show, it was even like sexier and grittier than he wrote on the page. Which he said, never. It's hard to out gritty and sexy him at that time on television,
right? Because it was pretty. Like there are some scenes in there. She just shoots, and she shoots people in the head. She blows. She's just blowing people away. In the first couple pages, someone breaks into her house, and she shoots the shit out of him. Right, just right away, you see all this stuff. And
there's pedophilia in here. There's abortion issues. There's fidelity, a lot of infidelity, I should say. It does have that, you know, just like that, the stuff that just finds its way into every TV show these days, but in the early 90s was more like Cagney and Lacey than this.
It is really, I really it feels of a time, but it also feels like it's pushing a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, it looks very 80s and early 90s, but it feels like it's taking a couple more steps forward in what would be, you know, that pulpy piece of it. But I think it's to that pulp roots when we think about sort of like Young Men's Magazine and all those things back in the day where, like, the goal was to tell this gritty story, this pulpy thing.
Quippy,
and that's
too.
What this is. Right. In these, like, bite-sized chunks of what this looks like. So let's talk about
the opening. Can we talk about the opening of this book? Yeah. Miss Tree's introduction.
Right. Yes.
So, like, the first issue we open up on, and it's Miss Tree's asleep. I believe I'm just kind of going this cold. I'm not going to flip through it here. You can correct me if I make any major errors. But she's asleep in her bed, and she's kind of having rough dreams about her past. And she wakes up, and someone's in her house. Someone has the key to her house, and she gets a phone call saying, "Hey, the man who killed your husband is in your house and trying to kill you." So she gets out of bed, surprises the guy, right? And, you know, gets him, disarms him. And then we cut to the outside of the house and you see, bam. And you're like, oh, dang. This woman just got out of bed, stone cold at night, and just
murders.
Well, I mean, to be fair, he broke into her house, but straight up.
Yes.
Yeah. Murdered just this kills dude. This there guy, wasn't right? like... It wasn't like she was forced to do it. Like he forced her hand, and then no, she had him subdued, and then still chose to kill him. And we see that a couple of times in this book.
Right?
But like that's you. So I texted you when I was reading it. I was like, I'm gonna start Miss Tree, and I think I texted like 10 minutes later. I was like, I love this book. Because it was, I read that opening scene, and I was like, what a we got ourselves a comic here, kids.
It's such a good opening, this idea of, you know, it tells you so much without telling you anything, right? Like, one, you get this kind of flashbacky dream sequence where she's like, in my dream, my husband was still alive. And you get the colors, the darkness, the noir of the guy coming up the hallway. The art is fantastic. You have her sort of like getting up. The facial acting in the drawing is fantastic. The you know, the whole thing you just said, like the husband's in your house, the shooting, the back and forth, that, and then just stone cold blam, shoots him. And then the police officer there, a little more flashback, a little more thing. It is a great cold open.
Yeah.
It is a cold open, like, who is this person? What do I know about them? All in, what is it, like 5 pages or something like that?
Yeah, and right? to your like, point, it is the pilot of a show, it feels like, too. I'm right. sure this wasn't, it does, I don't know if you started it at this point or whatever, as pilot, but it does feel like that. And then we cut to credits, opening credits.
Right? And it
would be done like the Daredevil opening of how they all are, but it would be like the roots of a tree. Like you'd be following up all these veiny things and it would come up.
It'd be a tree. It'd be perfect. I could like, so you're right. That first intro is such a good intro. So let's talk about Miss Tree as this character, right? Let's talk about Michael Tree as this main protagonist here. As you're reading this, as you're seeing her as this protagonist, one thing that kind of struck me was this sort of, you know, Collins balancing this idea of her as mom, because she is kind of taking care of her older, like her older stepson. It's not her real son, isn't it? Yeah, is it her stepson or is it? Yeah. Her older stepson, and being this hard detective, right? This balancing act of mom and this, and then becoming a mother later herself, right? Like seeing that piece of it. It is a really sort of, she ends up being this, not just this gritty character, but you get to kind of see layers of her.
Oh my gosh. Taking and, care and her of her reason family. For keeping the kid, like one of her main reasons being like that her and her beloved dead husband had a kid, but she had it aborted and she didn't know that. She thought there's going to be all these opportunities. So one of the reasons she's having it is to like honor his memory. It's like the kid that they didn't get to have. She's having it with like this scumbag, this dead scumbag. Oh my God. It's great. Yeah, but
it's
go ahead.
No, like it just as a character, you get to see her. There's many layers of her. The main layer is her is just a stone cold, like, you screwed with me, I'm going to shoot you. But you get all these bits and pieces of her story in there that I thought were really good for as a main character. You do get this kind of big arc in here, which I didn't expect.
Yeah,
right?
Let's talk about that. I wanted to ask you about that. What about this arc did you find, I was about to front load it, but different from just like your straightforward, like detective revenge mystery story?
Well, I think one of the things that you get in here is there's a lot more focus on sort of the relationship aspect of it, or the relationships of it. Having you and I having read some romance comics recently, right? This feels also that it has that sort of pulpy thread to it as well, right?
You're thinking that about the what's the one where she goes back and she lives multiple lives? Yeah,
yes. Oh shoot, now it's like sitting right by.
Because she has moments where she is very mistreated in her like cold, stone cold, like, I'm done right. with this, yeah.
But then she also, but I think you get this focus of, you get the relationship with her stepson. You get the relationship with Dominique Muerta, like the head of, just early on. And then her, and then Muerta's is her son, the ponytail scuzzbag.
Well, see, that's why I think this tree works on a third level, because it's a lot of family tree stuff in here. Everyone's like uncles.
Right, yes.
There's a lot of aunts in here. There's a lot of cousins.
Yes.
You know, as what you expect on like a mafia crime family, but it's also her, because later her sister comes in and the sister is not related to the stepson. So there's kind of like some sexual tension there too. And it's just like, it's so weird.
There's a lot of relationship in here that I think you don't see always in a crime book, right? Like, no, this is, and it, the relationship you usually get in the crime book is the you know, the femme fatale and the main guy, right?
Yeah.
But you see her balancing all these other relationships throughout, and I thought that gave this story lots of layers, which again reminds me of television. You have your B plots and your C plots and your sort of like side characters who also you see throughout these issues,
unlike some like modern shows where they would take a whole episode and it'd be like, we're taking time for the protagonist so they don't have to shoot this episode. And we're going to follow like the guy, like I said, with one hand at the office. Then we're going to follow the stepson. No, it's like, they do a really good job of, like you said, building off of all of those, but slowly through their interactions with Mystery.
Right. And I think that that's one of the biggest differences for me. And I think as a character, you get some depth from her, but you also, I mean, it really is the title, like one bad mother. She is like, or one mean mother. She is like seriously just stone cold the whole time. And like the outfits with the black gloves and just like that sort of black blue trench coat, just looking tough as nails the entire thing. Just this.
Raquel Welch was set up to play her, he said.
Yes, which is just this perfect sort of idea. It was such a fun jaunt. I don't know how else to like describe it, but it really is like, it was like watching an old TV show, but a little more gratuitous, because it can be, because, you know, like something then you wouldn't have seen Murder, She Wrote. You wouldn't have seen Angela Lansbury blow a dude away, like shoot him in the head. Like it wouldn't have happened. Right. But you get that in here, which is really fun.
And it's a good and not like a, hey, this is old, weird stuff. Cause it's not weird. In fact, you know, of course he's going off of decades upon decades upon decades of actual pulp novels.
Yeah.
But when you think about Brubaker, you read something like this, which came out before he was really writing that crime stuff, it kind of makes some of his stuff not less impressive, but just the sense of a less of a magician. Cause you're like, oh,
yeah,
you know, Mystery was doing this 20 years earlier.
Right. It's a really, like, there are so many, I don't know. Every issue ends in someone getting shot. Always. There's always somebody, like, there are not episodes where it pauses. Right. And so we think about like modern television. You had mentioned it, the idea of like, oh, we're going to follow this character. We're going to take a break from this formula. This thing sticks to a formula every issue And it's great. I'm not bored by the formula of like scuzzbag person gets shot because they're a scuzzbag. Like, it's this really weird sort of thing where I'm like, okay, right? Like, even.
And they all tie into each other very well.
Right. Right. Even like giant, even like the giant cousin, right? The
mean where's my favorite issue. My favorite issue.
Are you like, because she distracts him by taking her top off?
Well, it's, it was such, very memorable.
It's such a all funny, right. Like,
choose
it's
new it's, favorite panel.
It's such a funny thing where, like, it's so goofy, but it works always. Like, even the cheesiest pieces in this don't come off as cheesy, which is impressive for me because, you know, we've read older stuff before. And the dialogue can sometimes just be, ugh, right? You can really struggle.
Yeah, even
it.
In like Alan Moore stuff from like the 80s, it can right. feel a little bit stilted.
But I feel like this was not written. When we think of like who is reading, you know, we think of like Image Comics. Who's reading Image Comics? It was written for 13-year-olds. This wasn't written for 13-year-olds.
Well, I was trying to think. I was trying to think. Did they ever talk about Miss Tree in Wizard magazine?
Oh, I don't know. I don't
know. You know, because I was like, I feel like as a kid, you're like an adult now and reading Wizard, you kind of flip through it and you kind of read the articles or whatever underneath the comic book character you like.
Yeah.
And you leave off a lot of this stuff at the time. And yeah. I'm like, were they even talking about this stuff in there? Or was it all like Spider-Man and, you know, Image and all that stuff?
Right. And I just like, it was such a fun read. So let's talk secondary characters. Of all this big cast of characters in here, which one did you find the most interesting or which one did you like as they popped up? And like could mean like you didn't like them, but it was fun to see them keep coming back just characters throughout.
As we mentioned, the mustache already. There is a character that appears like towards the end as like a third member of the detective agency. I guess they've been making more money or they're hiring stuff on there. He's in like the last issue. I think his name is Mr. Hand, and it's not the guy with no hand, weirdly. But he has like this turtleneck and like a mustache, and he's really like adept at doing, you know, he's really like the reconnaissance guy, and he's like, I got him on my sights. I got a headshot. You just tell me, Miss Tree. And I'm like, who is this guy? I want to know more about this. Like, because I'm like, why are Miss Tree and this guy hooking up? I feel like their energies are very similar.
What's funny is like, there's so many, like, you mentioned that, and then like, there's bumbling, not bumbling, but there's like criminals in every issue, like a criminal, and none of them look the same.
Yeah.
Like, they each get their own, like, thing. You mentioned that guy, but there's another guy with a turtleneck who tries to break into her house again when she's pregnant, and like they try to shoot her and they tie her up, like they duct tape her up, he breaks in the house, all of this stuff, and he ends up like she knocks him down the stairs and he breaks his neck. Like, there's all these scenes with all these different characters.
Or the balding goon at the end of the boat, he's like, I'll give you back the kid, just don't kill me. And she goes, you don't have any more chips to play, honey. Boom, shoots him.
Just shoots him. It is.
And she knows the boat because, like, as she mentioned, she goes, oh, I know exactly where that is. And, like, why? You're like, oh, because you dated this guy, son, like 3 issues ago.
Yeah. It's a super, I don't know. It is a fun, goofy, like, all the characters are fun. I think one of the ones that I liked seeing, but he's just such a great scummy 90s character, is the ponytail like son.
Yeah.
Of Dominic Muerta. Just wonderful. Just skeezy and just.
Yeah. 90s ponytail villain. Yeah. You know,
just a great kind of villain. He wants to work with her. Right.
You know who he reminds me of? He reminds me of the bad guy in Karate Kid 3. Right?
I can see that. Yeah. I do.
And
where's
the Spanish coming into this mafia from?
I guess the mom, maybe. She had dark hair, but.
Because they said they're Italian. They're all like Italian and stuff like that.
I don't know. Maybe it's, well.
Yeah, I guess that would be Italian. Or maybe it's not.
I don't know.
Yeah,
maybe it's Italian. But either way.
Muerta.
And maybe I'm in Arizona, so I'm saying muerta.
Muerta.
Yeah. So, well, it's a love language, so I assume death means Latin. The same thing in either one, right? All those little characters, the one that I liked the least, the one that I was like, I don't need this person, is the stepson. The stepson was kind of...
Michael Jr.?
Yeah, but it ends up being like Michael Jr. At first, I don't realize that he's in his 20s, right? Like, it's hard to, like...
Well, he's engaged to the crime family's younger daughter.
Right. And so
I like how he like takes care of Mystery when she's sick.
Yeah.
It's very nice. It's, Michael Jr.
It is very nice. But there's so many every character.
Michael Jr. like so... from isn't that the character's name in what's the show?
Arrested Development?
Yeah.
Yes. It was there's a high school reunion episode or issue,
really
which is great. It's just like they go, and for some reason, she's dressed in her cheerleading outfit. Like, no one else, like, is dressed like that at this reunion, but she is. And then the guy that she's dating is in his football stuff. And it's just like, but no one else is dressed like that at this function, but you two.
And then I started thinking about it. I go, well, it would be the 80s. So they would be, like, maybe they're, like, maybe she's, like, my mom's age when it was the 80s. I'm like, yeah, my mom did wear that kind of stuff to high school. And then it made me feel even older.
Yeah, no.
Muerta. It's coming for us all.
It is. Slowly we march towards death.
We'll see you next, well, maybe not.
next episode.
maybe not.
So let's talk art. What did you think about the art in this book?
Well, I mean, anytime we talk about something that's not current, I mean, so much of this now... You know, there are people who are publishing comics. Like, there's, you know, like Darwin Cook kind of never gets away from this style when he was alive. This very, you know, 80s style of...
What's his name on Batman Year One? Is it Mazzucchelli? Who does Batman Year One?
Yes, I could see that as well. But, you know, and it's, you know, he wrote one of the... Was it this the draw for Dick Tracy or the writer write for some Dick Tracy stuff? But it also even feels a little bit older than that. So, you know, like the sense of like there's some Tracy lines going in here with these really sharp lines.
And I think one you had mentioned earlier, we kind of talked about earlier, like everybody is incredibly distinct. Yeah. Every person has something.
Which you don't, I mean, it's right. Hard to do that, man.
It is, which is either a mustache, a scar, a hook for a hand, speaking of Arrested Development, or
balding.
They all have something different, and it works very well. The artist does a really good job, and I will tell you, one of the best things about this book is the facial acting. Ms. Tree gives you every possible emotion throughout this thing, and it is... Most of them are like stone cold, I'm going to kill you, or angry face. But like she's about to kill somebody and you see like joy on her face. Like it's all of these.
It's funny because every now and then, sometimes while I'm reading, I'll remember to pick out a favorite panel. I know we haven't done it in a while. And that is my favorite panel for this book has to do just with that. It's where... she shoves like a goon down a staircase and you see her in the top of the staircase framing the door frame. And she's got her hand on her hip and she got this look on her face. Just like, that's what you get, mother.
it is the facial acting. This is great. Every character has like you can see their emotion throughout. The design work for every character is really good. It feels dated as far as it being, you know, these are characters that are drawn. But I will also tell you, the fashion meets the time. So it's not like sometimes in comic books today, people are just drawn in clothes and it's hard to tell the era. This is very much like the artist here was like, no, this is what people wear right now. Right? Like it feels of a time and in a time.
The female work outfits.
Yes.
Were just all, like, my mom owned all the Oz outfits.
Like, just great. Even the even
blazers, the... like the to-the-knee skirts. Right. Yeah.
The suits on everybody. It is, this is good design.
Even work. Like, even when... look at Morta here, his sweater, his Cosby sweater.
Yes, it's great. And then, like, there's one episode where, there's, like, one thing where, like, she's sneaking around, and she has, like, pants on, and, like, big boots and like the popped collar on her jacket. Like, there, the style work in this is great,
and it feels like Jim Lee stole a couple of these fashion choices for his early X-Men run.
the tennis scene, great. It is hard for me, and that's why I think like this balances that idea of like those romance comics where it was all people. Right. Mm-hmm. This pulpy sort of pulpy detective world. Right. You get both. You really get a sense of who people are, because in superhero books, you get costumes to delineate who everybody is. Right. Oh, right. I know that's Superman. I know that's Batman. I know that's Flash. Flash wears all red, whatever it is. But here she really has to work. And Ms. Tree wears different outfits throughout everything. Every character has several outfits throughout this book, and they're all good. This is probably the most surprising read I've had in a long time, to just go like, I'm gonna read this goofy book for,
considering
from
how old it is too. It's just like, why haven't you heard about this before, you know?
And just read it and go like, there's nothing, I have no complaints about this read.
Well,
it was great.
My only complaint is that it, you know, one of the things you go into these, typically you'd go into a book like this with, is like, okay, it's going to be weird. I have to adjust to the book. But there was no adjusting to this book. This book was very contemporary in its writing style and storytelling. And so now, if we're going to go back and go to other books in those areas, you know, you can't expect a mystery every time. You're going to have to expect an Infinity Gauntlet.
Right. And I'm just so impressed with the, just so impressed with every piece of this. This is one where I have it digital, and then part of me goes like, man, do I want this? And do I want to hold this? Like, we keep reading a book, and I'll be like, I read it digital, but like, man, it'd be fun to have it for real. But I don't know if the colors would pop as well as they do here, that the coloring is funny.
Yeah, I saw some photos of some of the original floppies in their coloring, and it doesn't pop as much. Because the paper some of these are on.
But even the reprint, the Titan Comics reprint, like, just to have this volume, that would be fun. But I'm going to tell you what, I want to go find the originals. That's like a hunt for me now in my head, is to go like, where do I find?
Because I think it is a book you can pull off the shelf and hand to someone and be like, hey, you like good stories? Read this.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, you're gonna be a mother? Well, why don't you be one bad mother?
Why don't you be one bad mother? One mean mother. Okay, the end of the book. The end of this book. She allows an old man to die of a heart attack.
Yeah.
And just walks away.
Yeah.
And
she gives him the heart attack with this news.
Yes. My medicine. Like, are you a witch? You are a witch. And she, and the her last line, I am. Like, just, and then the last panel is just a dead guy. Just a dead old man in a wheelchair.
Leaves a wake of bodies.
Throughout this entire
thing. She's going to give up her child because she's like, my lifestyle just can't. I'm like, yeah, that's probably a good choice, Miss Tree.
Right? Maybe you shouldn't. But it was just, I don't know, man, just a fun read the whole time. I would tell, you know, if you like a good pulpy read, it's not a mystery. It's not a whodunit. It is just a straight up crime serial, right? It is like watching a television show. And I think sometimes that's the thing I miss in modern comics, is modern comics are often written for the trade. And so instead of telling you a story in an issue, you have to go five issues to get that story.
Right.
What I enjoy about this is you get that B plot that runs all of these issues, right?
but you get that serialized story each issue, right?
Yeah.
Each issue is here's our antagonist. Here's our issue. Okay. It's come to a head. It's solved. Here's the issue. And so the B plot runs through all of it and you get all those pieces. But I feel like we've really lost that in modern comics. We just tell you a long form story and there's no, we lose that piece of that. What makes serialized storytelling so good? And I think sometimes the television is that same way, right? We just started watching the new True Detective season,
mm-hmm.
right? And it is, it's like, it's just going to be one long 10-hour story. Yeah. That's what it is. And sometimes I miss the, you know, the in and out crime of the week, issue of the week sort of storytelling that I think this book does really well.
Yeah. But it does work as a long piece too.
That's what I'm saying.
Callbacks to it. Yeah.
You get that good B plot in there the entire time, right? Like that thing with the X-Files. The X-Files tells a monster of the week, but you get the B plot of the government and all of that sort of thing running that through thread through it. And you do get that in this as well. So, Travis, here's what I want to know. Do you want to read any more of this? Are you going to seek out any more of this
in
your digital reader?
You know what? As much as I loved it, I don't think so anytime soon.
Okay.
Not because the book wasn't bad, but just because I felt like they might have cherry picked like the best issues, like the best section of it, and given it to me. And I was like, okay,
that's what I'm curious about.
If this was truly the beginning of this. And it went on and there was like, you know, we could turn around. I'm like, oh, okay. And maybe it does. I don't know. But to me, it felt like, hey, we're taking this section because we like it's like the Red Wedding section of it. And we're going to give it to you. And I'm like, okay, this was good. I like this. And there was enough of it here. It's like 266 pages.
Yeah.
That like even though it didn't feel like it took me a long time to get through, it wasn't in one sitting. And and I was like, oh, okay. So I'm just not compelled at this moment to go and seek out more.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think this is that thing where they put their best foot forward out of all of the stuff they've done. They even said, like, we gave you this because we thought this was the best place to start. This was our best vision of this. I'm curious as to what some of the older stuff is like curiosity might get me to check it out, but this was such a solid read that I'm kind of like, oh, this is like I had a really, really good pizza from this place and I don't know that I want to go try, you know, the sub sandwich.
A fun way to do which might bring back what you were talking about earlier about, you know, wanting these like in the original like floppies or whatever it is like challenge stuff. I can't read, say you can't read it until you find them in its original forms out in the wild. I'm not talking about eBay, Josh. You got to go to brick and mortar.
I will tell you, I am curious to do the eBay hunt. I am curious to like go check
see and if see there's if a I lot of them. Yeah.
Of yeah. All right, folks, this was Ms. Tree. Out on Titan Comics in the Under the Hard Case Crime imprint. Oh, that's a good one. Reading the mystery. written by Max Allen Collins. Artist is Terry Beattie or Betty. Thank you so much for tuning in. You can find the podcast over at comicexposure.com. All the show stuff, all that. You can you can listen to all of our old episodes where we've talked about a multitude of books over the years. I think one of the things that I enjoy most about this process, Travis, is that we don't early on, we read a lot of like, what's new, what's out, what are we doing? Right. And we still read new stuff. We try to find new stuff. But I think one of the things that I really enjoy is like, let's go, what's this old gem or what's this thing that, you know, I just found this, let's go read it. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Or what's accessible, you know, like what's accessible and still good.
Right. And so this is accessible. You can find it on Kindle. Was this one cheap or free? I don't remember.
This is free for me.
Yeah. Free on Kindle Unlimited. So if you have Kindle Unlimited, go read it. It is well worth the read.
Yeah.
Go check it out. Super enjoyable. And I think that's it. Travis, we'll see them next trade.